Well, hello and welcome to the Profit Express. I'm Tim Healy, and I'm inviting you to join me each and every Wednesday so you could be prepared to win the battle for business. That's right. Thanks for sharing some of your time with me today. And of course, a big thank you to our good friends and sponsors, Corbett Public Relations, where they've been promoting and protecting businesses and brands for over 30 years. So do yourself a favor. Visit Bill and his team at CorbettPR.com. That's CorbettPR.com. Welcome aboard, everybody. So for all of my small business fans who are listening today, I'm actually going to talk about a topic that ordinarily would not have registered for me to talk about. But oddly enough, it's critically important to each and every small business owner out there. Now, when you think of or you hear the phrase trusted advisor, if you're a small business owner, you know exactly what I'm talking about. There are essentially three trusted advisors when it comes to business. You have your accountant, your CPA, you have your attorney, and your financial advisor. And my own personal experience and professional experience as a business owner with accountants in over 20 years that I've been in business has unfortunately not been great. It's been kind of disappointing to utterly frustrating. And my last accountant, who I fired not too long ago, he did good work, but he felt comfortable enough to lecture me if I was late for a meeting. And I had to remind him that, hey, I'm the guy paying the bills here. But anyhow, that relationship didn't last. Now, when you think about your CPA, when you think about your accountant, and every profession has the stereotypes, right? Whether right or wrong, we have them, and we have them for a reason. So when you think CPA, you might think terms of like, you know, bean counters, number crunchers, right? Not very impressing, right? And not a lot of them. And again, I'm speaking from my experience or when I talk to my friends and colleagues who are business owners, we often kind of agree that CPAs aren't also the best communicators. I mean, you think about it, the issue of taxing, but your taxes, your financial statements, it's intimidating for a lot of business owners. I know it can be for me because we're not experts when it comes to taxation and profit and loss and financial statements. So having an accountant who is an effective communicator is super valuable. So you think, well, Tim, okay, we know accountants are hit and miss. They're not great. They don't have great personalities. Why are we talking about it today? I'm talking about it because I was recently introduced to, in my opinion, what might be one of the most creative accountants out there that I have ever seen. It's a firm, and they're based out in Utah. And their motto on the website is prominently displayed on the website. And their motto is, the IRS sucks. And when I first saw them, I'm like, whoa, hold on a second. These guys are interesting. They're approaching business differently. And the firm is Insight Tax and Accounting. Again, like I said, they're out in Utah. But they're not just about, of course, taxation and preparing your payroll and your quarterlies and your annual taxes. They make a very concerted effort to let you know, their clients or potential clients, that they really think about ways of making money, building wealth, preserving wealth. And the message that they share, like I said, I have never seen an accounting firm with such a fun, uplifting, exciting message before. And I'm sure as you're going to be listening to the show, you're going to be checking out the website. So what is this guy, Tim? What is Tim talking about? So, and I'm saying this because this could be a good way to examine your current CPA, your accountant. Are you getting the service that you deserve? So I said, I got to have this guy on. He seems super interesting. And again, I love the energy and the feel of the website. So today's guest, welcome aboard. It's John Briggs. He's a founder and CEO of Insight Tax and Accounting. John, how are you today, sir?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
No, listen, it's a pleasure. I never thought I'd be that excited about an accountant. I got to be honest. You know, like I said, my own personal and professional experience, you know, it's been okay. And again, I don't want to trash all accountants. There's a lot of accountants who do good quality work. But my beef has been they are too one-dimensional. They're not great communicators. And when small business owners need them most, I think they kind of fall short. So that's why you're here today. Not too much pressure. But let me start with the motto. Let me start with the motto, the IRS sucks. Why did you decide to really predominantly represent that on your website?
There's a couple reasons. First one is, if you meet other accountants, and you laid out, in my opinion, a really great description of the majority of accountants in the industry, you get the sense that the accountant is actually working for the government and not for you, when in fact, you're the one paying the accountant, not the government. So that's one of the reasons I felt like there's a unfair relationship between most accountants and the IRS, and the client is the one who suffers. The other reason is, I don't think there's a more empowered organization that acts like a bully than the IRS.
And yes.
Like, I make a joke when clients sometimes ask me questions or I'm doing a presentation, and I'm like, look, if you ask one question to 10 CPAs, you will get 15 different answers. The same applies to an IRS agent, because the IRS agent actually isn't trained on tax code. They're trained on IRS procedures. So everything comes down to, well, this is how we do it. And in our interactions with IRS agents, we have uncovered that the majority of them are ridiculously incompetent, yet they hold all the authority. Mm. And so that's kind of where we arrive at this idea that the IRS sucks, because they are bullies. They've been empowered with authority from the government to be those bullies, and they don't actually honor the mission on their website, which is to make sure clients pay their minimum, or their, like, their fair share, I think is what their actual mission says. Mm-hmm, they're mm-hmm. actually just interested in taking money from clients, even if it's not fair.
You made an important distinction. So you said the IRS agents are not really educated in tax code, but more procedure, and that's really what they're looking at?
Yeah, no, that absolutely. It's unbelievable how many times I've had to explain tax code to the agent, because they're like, well, we're disallowing this. I'm like, well, you can't, because the code says this. Well, in our procedure, we're told that we need to do it this way. And it's like, okay, cool, but here's the tax code. And then in most cases, we usually tell the agent, hey, you know what, why don't you just refer this to your supervisor? What's their information? We'll talk directly to them.
Right.
And that usually gets them to realize, oh, maybe I should look at this tax code thing.
No, so, but think about it. So obviously, I'm assuming most businesses have a CPA doing their taxes, or at least they certainly should. But even on the individual side, you know, people don't know tax code, and they're just going to say, oh, okay, and they're going to get screwed. I mean, that's what I'm hearing. That's what it's going to come down to.
Yeah, think about any time you've gotten a letter in the mail from the IRS. Most of the time, people just assume, oh, this sucks. I guess it's true. Right. I'll pay whatever they're asking. In our experience, at least 80% of those letters are completely incorrect.
80? You think it's as high as 80%? Those letters are not correct.
The ones that we get from our clients, at least 80% are wrong, where we have to write a letter and explain the situation to the IRS, whether that's what the client did and what we have proof of when they filed, tax rules. I mean, there's a combination of things that we need to prove to them. But, like, effectively, we're saying, you're wrong. I'm sorry your crazy program system generated this letter, but it's not accurate.
Wow. I didn't expect that high. Okay. So now, all right. So the IRS sucks, and I know as the small business owners are going to be hearing this, they're, you know, waving their fists in like, all right, this guy John is awesome. So there's that, and we can certainly appreciate it. But I'll make another stereotype. You know, we say accountants being counters, number crunchers. Another one that you might say, not a lot of, even just small business owners, aren't necessarily very creative. And you've done a great job of branding your firm, and we're going to get into that. But one of the things that you have that I found out about, you've actually authored a book, and it's called, if I have it right, Profit First for Micro Gyms. And you've chosen, and this is interesting from the marketing perspective, you've chosen, as your firm has chosen, to focus on the niche of working with gyms. Why did you make that decision?
So years ago, I read a book called The Pumpkin Plan by Mike Michalowicz. Mm-hmm. And in that book, he compares these farmers who grow 1,000-pound pumpkins. It's like, how the heck do they do that? Mm-hmm. He found out, and then he realized, oh my gosh, that's how businesses niche. And their methodology can be applied directly to other businesses. So like as an example, they plant all their seeds, and then within the first couple of weeks, they'll go out and pluck off the majority of the pumpkins. They're looking at which ones are growing the fastest. Mm-hmm. We're going to keep those. They repeat that cycle a couple times until they literally have one pumpkin left, because now all the nutrients of the vine are going to the one pumpkin. And then you weed like crazy because you don't want anything to take away from the nutrients. So I read that book, and obviously we see the play of, this is niche. We have to niche down. And you hear phrases like the riches are in the niches.
Yeah.
And there's truth to that. But what I love about Mike Michalowicz's books is that he always provides really practical, like, tools that a business owner can do themselves. And so we went through some exercises, and as part of it, we realized, wow, we already had about 20 clients at the time that were gym owners. We enjoyed working with them. They took our advice. It's amazing sometimes how clients do pay us money and then they won't take our advice or do the things we're asking them to do to improve their growth of wealth. But gym owners did it. So like, man, we should have more of these clients. I want more of these clients. So we decided to change our marketing at that point to be geared towards gym owners and their challenges. And it's turned out pretty well. We have more than 500 gym clients at this point. And now they only represent, they're less than 20% of our total business, but we have more gym clients than other accounting firms in the country.
Okay. So as far as accounting firms, you have the most amount of gyms compared to any other accounting firm.
Correct.
Wow. Okay. So you guys are like, have got to be the go-to source for accounting for gym owners.
I would hope so, since we have more of them than any other accounting firm. So we have more repetition with them. We know what they need. I actually did a crazy thing a few years ago, owned a gym for 3 years, just so that I could understand them better. And the challenges they get through or are faced with. And I know there's not another CPA firm out there that also was a gym owner.
Wait, hold on. So you read the book, the Pumpkin Plan or Pumpkin Patch, whatever it was. Pumpkin Plan. You say, okay, so you get the idea of drilling down into a niche. You enjoy doing business with gyms. You had 500, you grow it, you write the book. Then at one point in this timeline, you decided to buy and own an actual functioning gym?
Yeah.
Just so you can have an understanding of exactly what they go through.
Yeah.
Well, how did you get that idea?
It wasn't necessarily an idea per se. So I like to exercise, and I was going to a gym.
Right.
And they had an ownership change. And so these new owners, it was about 12 months in, and something happened. And so the two owners became one owner. And I realized, this guy doesn't actually realize that he doesn't know who I am. I'm not that type of person to be flamboyant in class. And so I'm like, hey, you don't know this, but I actually have an accounting firm. We work with hundreds and hundreds of gyms. My guess is, and I kind of laid out for him what my observations were just by being a class member. You're probably not making any money. Probably struggling with paying your coaches, like just a bunch of things. And now he should have responded with, who the heck do you think you are?
Right.
Don't tell me how to run my business. But instead he's like, do you want to go to lunch? And so we went to lunch, we talked more about it. And he basically said, would you like to buy in and be a 50% owner? Because I, in my email to him, I said, if I were you, I would, these would be my first three immediate steps. Just based on my experience in the industry and like the business coaches that I had met, I'm like, you should hire this guy, you should implement this, and you should do this. So he offered, I thought about him, like, here's the chance. Absolutely. Let's take it. Because I know on paper that the most successful gyms have group training, personal training, and nutrition, that they have a combination of those three services, the majority of them. And he wasn't doing any of that. I also know that sometimes you have to change the pay structure with your coaches. And so with clients, we would give them this advice, but then a month happens, 2 months happen, a year passes by, and we're like, hey, client, why haven't you implemented these things yet? And they're like, oh, I mean, they give us excuses. But I realize that now, of course, after living it, being the gym owner who says, hey, coaches, we need to change the way we pay you. Right, hey, coaches, right. We need to add training services. I now get there's this whole other side of not on the financial statements that they have to deal with. And so now it's easier for us when we're asking this, we can say, hey, look, I know your coaches are going to give you pushback here. Here are some things to consider. Or if you're not comfortable with this, here's a business mentor you could reach out to and use their services, and they can help you through this process. So now we just, not only do we know financially what they need to do, we understand the emotional side of what those actions might end up happening, like the way that might play out in their life.
Man, I'm learning more and more about you here, John. I don't think you're an accountant. I got to be honest. You're not a CPA. So you just think too much out of the box, man. So as I'm hearing this, I've actually had John Taffer on the show from Bar Rescue. It's like you're gym rescue. And now that you've been in it, you have this legitimacy that when you talk to, you know, potential gym clients, that what other accounting firm is going to have that?
Yeah, I'm not aware of another accounting firm that also owned a gym just so they could understand their clients better.
Wow. Okay. That's pretty amazing. I got to be honest. All right. So now we'll just get back to the general topic of small businesses. Okay. From your perspective, I'll speak as a business owner, you know, taxes and finance can be intimidating. Right. Because it's not what we do. We own gyms or, you know, we're a florist or whatever. So how financially literate do you think the typical small business owner should be about their financial statements?
So I don't think business owners give themselves enough credit of what they really do understand. But like you said, it's not what most of us go into business doing.
Right.
And for that reason, a lot of times they easily talk themselves out of their ability to understand what they need to about their accounting. And so it becomes this giant thing like, hey, we're going to teach you how to be a brain surgeon. When in reality, they have the capacity and ability to learn it. So that's the first thing I want to say about financial literacy. I think everyone has it in them to know the amount that they need to know.
Right.
I definitely don't think they need to understand what in the accounting world we call debits and credits. Like, I don't think you need to know, oh, when cash gets deposited, how do I do that in my accounting? They don't need to go that level. They should be able to look at a profit and loss statement and balance sheet and have a general idea of what's going on. They should be able to look at a profit and loss statement broken out in month by month, and be able to look at trends and see trends. And I definitely think they should be able to take time to sit down, you know, whether that's at most once a week or twice a month, to manage their cash. And when they manage their cash, I think they should be able to understand if the cash flow is up or cash flow is down or income was up or expenses are up. I think they should be able to have that level of financial literacy. And I really think that's all they need, because they can rely on professionals to do the nitty gritty, boring stuff that they didn't go into business to do.
Right.
Let them do the things, put the reports together, but you should understand the reports.
Well, listen, all right, I'm already feeling a little bit better because you said I don't have to really worry about debits and credits, because that always, you know, that blew my mind. I still don't get that debit credit thing. But I, you know, the reports on a weekly, monthly basis. So, you know, you're getting, you know, you're able to take the temperature of your business. And then you mentioned one very important thing I want to dive a little deeper, cash flow, because any business out there, we've all at one point or another have probably been stuck in a not great point with cash flow, and we felt the pinch. And sometimes it could keep you up at night. I mean, you know this. So let's talk about, you know, what advice do you have for the small business owner? What are some of the keys to understand it and be on top of cash flow?
So I will first say, if you want to dive into the cash flow concept, I either recommend, obviously selfishly, my book, Profit First for Micro Gyms. I think any business owner can gather information out of it. Or you can read the original book written to all business owners by Mike McAllowitz called Profit First. That will give you a nice deep dive into the idea of cash flow. But I think what we need to understand is that the way we currently handle our cash flow is a little backwards, because most of us have one business account and we do everything out of that one business account. Well, the issue is this thing called Parkinson's Law, which states the demand for something expands to match the supply. Mm-hmm. In context of what we have here, you have one bank account, which is a giant pile of supply. Our demand to spend that supply will continue to increase until there's no longer any money left to spend. And that's usually how businesses work. It's what we call bank balance accounting. So one simple thing we love about a cash flow management system is, let's separate out some of these cash demands so that when I look at the bank account I'm going to use for operating expenses, it's a more realistic number, instead of having my tax bill in there, my vendor bills, my payroll for my team, my own pay. Like, every time we get a dollar into our business, there's already claims on a portion of that dollar. But if we leave it in one bank account, it's hard for us to see that. So we recommend at least separating out some of these main things in a system, and just having extra bank accounts is the way we recommend doing that. It's the simplest. And so that's kind of a general idea of a way to think about cash flow.
Okay. So it's the actual management of, you know, instead of having just one big bucket of cash, kind of separating it, kind of keeps it a little cleaner, helps you see, this is what I'm getting from it, helps you see it a little better. Because like you said, you'll find ways to spend it if it's just one big number.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, business owners get to the end of the year, right? Oh, your taxes are due. You owe $3,000, $5,000, $10,000 in taxes. And we'll sometimes get the comment from a client, there's no way I owe that much money. I didn't make that much money. That's not possible. If I owe that, where is it? You know? Well, because human nature is, we saw the money in the bank account and we spent it, but we didn't realize a percentage of it was to pay our tax liability. So by simply separating out some of these things, we like owner's pay, giving yourself profit distributions. I have a separate account for my team, taxes, you know, like, let's separate those out already from the front end so that I don't accidentally spend it or think it's available to spend.
Yeah, just that one simple exercise, you're kind of seeing, you know, X number of buckets, like you said, payroll or whatever it might be, operating expenses, a lot more clearly. That's interesting. Let's jump back to marketing.
Okay.
I've never seen, as I said in the intro, I've never seen a firm, an accounting firm that is as forward thinking on their branding. So as I said, you know, we start off the show, you talked about the IRS sucks. You know, your team has t-shirts with, you know, hashtag IRS sucks and all those fun things. And, you know, you have a lot of things talking about, you know, your mission and what you bring to your clients. So here's my question. It's so untypical of accounting firm to be that forward thinking with their message and their brand, and to be what I would say like counterculture. So here's the question. Did you ever worry that it might alienate people? Were you think you were taking too much of a step off the ledge? Because you guys are out there. I mean, I think it's in a great way, but you have to make a very determined decision that that's how you want to brand yourself.
Yeah, such a great observation and question, because the reality is, as business owners, we don't want to be all things to all people. Mm-hmm. I heard of a guy who had a giant list, call like 70,000 emails, and he didn't really ever email these people because he was worried that people would unsubscribe. Well, the reality is that means of the 70,000, only a percentage of that audience is right for him. We are not right for everybody. If you like paying taxes, if you think the government is spending your money well, we're definitely not right for you. And honestly, from their pleasant experience with us and our pleasant experience serving them, that's not going to happen. We're going to bash heads the whole time. Why would we purposely set up a relationship with someone who has just a completely different philosophy on their viewpoint of the IRS or the government or what taxes do? Like,
right.
So
right.
I think it's really important that we communicate as business owners who we are, what we stand for, because it does avoid a situation where you have someone mad at you just simply because of philosophical reasons, has nothing to do with the good service you provided them.
Right.
And I, especially nowadays with social media, I think some people can go pretty crazy when people have difference of opinions. Like, heaven forbid, we all think differently. And it's better in my mind to alienate those people where that message detracts from them, because they're not going to be happy with right. using us anyways.
Well, you can't be, you know, the accounting firm for everybody. It's better to learn that up front than get halfway into a relationship and then, you know, they're leaving upset. And like you said, you know, will there be some social media blowback? So if you guys don't see eye to eye, let's just get on the table now. Then we're not the right firm for you.
Yeah.
You know, it makes it a lot easier.
We went to a trade show once, and our theme for the booth was, how hot is your hate? And so we had different levels of spicy candy. And obviously it's the hate for the IRS, and we wore red t-shirts and everything.
Right.
And I had a lady come up, and she looks at me and she's like, well, I like the IRS. And I said, that's so great for you. Do you want any candy? You know, like, thank you for identifying yourself that you would be miserable with our services, and it would not be a pleasure.
Right. Yeah. Hey, exactly. So it does take a little bit of courage, but I think it's just knowing who you are and being true to it. I mean, that's the way to go. This might be too hard of a question to really unpack. I don't know. But, you know, you clearly said on the website about, you know, helping, you know, beyond taxes. Okay. Beyond the financial statements, you help small businesses with money-making strategies and building wealth. To me, that almost seems beyond what accounting firms are meant to do. How do you do that?
Great question. So if we look at what are going to be some of our largest expenses over our lifetime, mm-hmm. tax is top two. And if we can play a role in minimizing that expense to somebody, and then we encourage them to consider things from financial planners, like, do you actually have a plan? Because as you know, probably 99% don't actually have a plan. Mm-hmm. So let's have a plan. And, oh, we saved you $4,000 in taxes. Maybe you want to make a plan to set aside 50% of the tax savings into something. so that then that $2,000 or whatever is going to grow. So we look at it from the standpoint of we want to help people minimize their taxes, but ultimately we want to encourage them to consider that really the purpose of doing all this is to grow their wealth so that their lifestyle, the comforts that they enjoy, increase year over year over year. And they have a plan when it comes to the point where they might retire and do stuff like that.
So it's clearly a more holistic picture, a more holistic conversation about who the client is, not just, okay, you know, I'll talk to you quarterly or I'll talk to you in March or April for your taxes. It's much more than that.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a percentage of people out there who are just so fearful. They want to know the compliance side was done well. But what we've learned, especially with accounting and bookkeeping, they're not really hiring us to give them monthly reports. They want help running their business better. They want more money in their pocket. They want more freedom of money. And so we just want to play our role in that by letting them know we have that same mindset. And so everything that we advise you on is where our goal is that you do end up having more freedom of money. So let me get you in front of the financial planner who's going to give you a plan that you need to put in place that you don't have. Let me get you in front of the estate attorney. So services we don't do, but we're happy to be the quarterback on that because we know it's an important component of,
sure,
I think, just less stress in our lives.
Sure, sure. John, this has been a very interesting conversation. I got to give you credit, man. This is, I never thought I'd have so much fun talking with the CPA. So here's the last question. So to me, as I see John Briggs, and again, you're the founder and the CEO of Insight Tax and Accounting. As I'm talking to you, you're every bit the small business owner as you are the accountant. So here's a question. If you had a do-over in your business, a do-over, a mulligan, what would it be?
I bought two accounting firms last year, and one of them has been a very large financial hit. It's been a disaster. So if I could have a mulligan, I'd go back and ask for a whole lot more due diligence information up front and not put so much trust on the person that I trusted. And then that would have let me see when they weren't able to provide the information I needed that I just shouldn't have done the deal in the first place.
Okay. All right. Well, it's a fresh one and it's a relevant one and lesson learned there. Thank you. Thank you for sharing. That's
lesson
a good one.
Definitely learned. Yeah. You got to do your due diligence. Don't trust people's words. Documents are better. If they can't document it, then it doesn't exist.
Yeah. Trust but verify. How can people follow you and your team?
So our website is insighttax.com, and that's like we use the word to incite a riot. So it's INCITE, TAX.com. We have a ton of great information on tax strategies on our blog. Of course, if you feel like you want someone to review your accounting situation, you know, do the contact us. We'd be happy to review tax returns, give you some advice, but sure. that's a really great place for them to start.
Awesome. John, I enjoy the conversation. You threw a curveball in there when you told me you owned a gym, and that was awesome stuff. That was really, really good. I respect that a lot.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. And again, thanks to today's guest, John Briggs, CEO and founder of Insight Tax and Accounting. And remember to be on board with the Profit Express each and every Wednesday as we download awesome shows like the one we had today with John Briggs from Insight Tax and Accounting. Follow me in the show on Instagram at The Profit Express. Hit the bells, the likes, the follows. You know the drills, the routines. Also on YouTube as well. Subscribe and follow. And until next time, this is The Profit Express.